Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 63 of the Crick Picks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. To my right is Estelle Vasudevan, who you can also find on Twitter at Estelle_Vasudev1. And to my left, as always, we've got Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. Just a quick briefing for all of you guys who are new to Crick Picks. What we do on this show is that we take any generic cricket category and then we draft our individual top five for that category in a snake-style draft competition. So the pick order goes 1-2-3, 3-2-1. And the topic for today is a very interesting one. We recently did best batters in test history to average under 50. And, you know, along those same frequencies, now we are going to draft the best test seamers who average 30 or above. Now, I have first pick for this one, guys. And I'm going to come clean. I did cheat a bit. I had Varun do some work for me. He basically drafted an entire list for me with match factors and everything. So I actually...
I don't know why you're telling us all this. You shouldn't have said anything. You should have just picked Brett Lee just to piss off Estelle. And that would have been the perfect way to start.
Incidentally enough, my first pick is Brett Lee. Oh. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. I have solid rationale for this. Now, Brett Lee played 76 test matches, took 310 wickets and averaged 30.82. And there is another seamer who many of you might have picked ahead of Brett Lee. And he also recently retired. But Brett Lee's match factor is 1.15, which means that he was 15% better than all the other seamers that played in those same games. He also has a strike rate of around 53. And he was quick, right? He was rapid. So he was bound to go for runs. But he did take wickets and he took them in heaps, which is why I feel like he deserves to be the number one pick. And I'm sorry, Estelle. Do you want me to do the chainsaw celebration for you now? Wasn't. Okay.
He wasn't your number one.
No, he wasn't. Oh.
So the only reason why I've gone for him as number one over the other guy, who I'm pretty sure you guys will pick like as your first pick, is the match factor. That's the only reason.
Well, that's not fair because you have an additional number.
Yes, because it wasn't possible for you, Estelle, to also contact Varun and ask him about the same thing. You're not in all the same groups that Behram is in.
I was sly about it. I DM'd him personally.
I don't think this is a bad pick at all. I do think he's massively underrated as a test bowler. I'm not sure if I would have taken him number one, but he would have been one or two for me, for sure.
So, Binga is out, and Estelle, you have the next pick.
Okay.
Imagine if she doesn't pick the other obvious one.
No, I'm not going to pick the other obvious one because it's not obvious to me.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Let me see. So this is my thinking, okay? I'm picking someone from the subcontinent because obviously it's a lot harder to bowl in those conditions. I will go with Javagar Srinath as my first pick.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Not a bad one.
I was considering him or another Indian pick, but Srinath has a better record in India. He's averaging 26. Overall, averaging 30.49. I think he also bowled during a really tough era. And isn't someone who is really spoken of too much. That's my first pick.
There were a fair few Indians you could have gone for, but the one thing that's working in Srinath's favor, of course, he's got 236 wickets in 65 tests, but his match factor is 1.01. So he was 1% better than the other seamers that bowled in those same games. And he is like one of those unsung heroes of that era of Indian fast bowling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I had him very high up on my list as well. Mm. Okay, I'll go Tim Southee since we've all danced around having Tim Southee.
I really thought that Behram would pick him because he's picked him in a lot of Crick Picks. Right?
I wanted to. Oh, he's batting. I wanted to. No, I've even picked him for a slow one. The Tim Southee cutter.
After Tim Southee, I've got a lot of names that are all more or less the same. I'm going to go with another Indian bowler though. I'm going to go with Zahir Khan.
Yeah, I thought Estelle was going to pick Zahir, actually.
That was for my options.
What's his match ratio?
Yeah, so Zahir Khan actually has pretty good numbers, right? 92 test matches, 311 wickets, and his match factor is 1.09, so 9% better than all seamers in the same games. And he was terrific, you know, overseas, and he used to swing the ball really well. Beautiful action, one of the better actions you see in cricket. I would have picked him ahead of Srinath, I think.
I was looking at his subcontinental record. It's not as good. Mm. That was the only reason that I went for Srinath, because he's averaging 35 in India, 39 in Sri Lanka, whereas Srinath's in the 20s in both of those places. So
yeah. And just on Tim Southee, of course, he is he has the most test wickets for a bowler who averages over 30, a seamer, mind you. 391 in 107 test matches. And his match factor is also 1.06, so he's just 6% better than the rest in those same games. I feel like it's a skewed career, though. Had he not played for the last 3 years, he would have ended up with an average below 30 and wouldn't even have made this list, right? Like, his record
as a teenager, right?
Yeah. Mm. That too. If you look at, you know, his bowling under Tom Latham in this recent period and his bowling under his own captaincy, really dropped off, like phenomenally dropped off, right? It was quite the slip. So I think that's what gets him to this list in the first place. Otherwise, he wouldn't even be on here.
I just think a 17 or 18 year career is, you know, like there's a lot of good bowlers on this list, but he's taken a lot more wickets than a lot of the other bowlers on this list, right? Without playing in big test series the way that Australian, England and Indian quicks do as well.
Yeah. Okay, that means Estelle, it's back to you for
back
your second pick.
Back to me. Oh, 1 second.
She's thinking.
Thinking. Okay, so I think I will go with another Indian in Ishan Sharma. Another guy who bowled in really tough conditions and was one of the standout players for India. He's 105 tests, so he's done it over a long period of time. 311 wickets at 32.40. It's got a decent record in India, 31, in New Zealand and West Indies. I think if you look at the other two Indians that we've gone, he's certainly number three, but I think during his time, he was one of the better bowlers from the subcontinent.
So it's a career split in two halves. There is the first half where Ishan Sharma is dog shit. And then there is the second half where he's actually really, really good. So I think it's a good pick in that context. But I would also pick him third amongst all three of those Indian seamers.
If India had better seamers when he was playing all those games, he wouldn't have played. He would have ended up with an average under 30. So it's a weird... I don't know how... I've got him lower on my list because of that. Like, you know, when it comes down to... It's the same with Tim Southee. Tim Southee, if New Zealand had just one or two extra seamers who were fully fit and always available, Tim Southee probably would have been pushed out of the side a little bit more. And so when he wasn't in form, you know, he wouldn't have been in it. They both have probably ended up with averages over 30, partly just because they had to be played at certain times when they maybe weren't, you know, weren't quite up to it. And they both started as teenagers.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And I mean, Ishant has some really memorable performances in England. Yeah. That Lord's Test where he bounced England out. And, you know, for the longest time, I was even contemplating why India got rid of him, because he, towards the end of his career, was also good. It's not like he dropped off. Fitness concerns, sure. His fitness definitely.
He played one bad test and they all convinced themselves that he was finished. And I was like, is he?
Exactly. Anyway, I had the exact same thoughts. And it was his best format. But anyway, strong start. I'm just happy you guys didn't pick my guy. And pick number two for me is Matthew Hoggard. 67 test matches, 248 wickets, average of 30.5, and a match factor of 1.12. So 12% better than the rest in those games. I was surprised to see him on this list. I was like, surely he must have averaged 27, 28. And you know, in that Michael Vaughan team, Hoggard was really, really good with the new ball. Like, my mind goes back to the 2005 Ashes where he was one of the main orchestrators alongside Harmy and Simon Jones. And yeah, it's crazy how he's averaging 30 plus. It's probably because of his overseas record, I'm guessing, because he was really good in England.
Yeah, I just think that there's two other English bowlers who I would have higher up than him on this list straight away. I like Hoggy. I thought he was a really good bowler. His record at a similar age was almost identical to Jimmy Anderson's. And then he retires, and then Jimmy Anderson goes on to have his 30s. I'm not saying Hoggard was quite the same kind of athlete. Slightly different physiques, it is worth saying. But I always thought that was really interesting. But yeah, I just think that the other two bowlers are much more impactful overseas and have other skills. But he deserves probably to be around the 15. But... If you're going just on match factor, Varun's obviously not on this chat. It'd be very interesting to see what his match factor was home and away. My guess is that Matthew Hoggard was unplayable at home And his match factor at home is probably awesome. And he probably struggles everywhere else. But that's just off the top of my head. I might be wrong at that. But his home, his actual away and home average is almost identical. So maybe it's not the case. Maybe he did really well with the new ball everywhere. But I thought he was a really good bowler. I've got no issue with him.
All right. So I'm probably just going to go for the other English seamer, like for my third pick as well. Let's go Harmy. Steve Harmison for number three. For a period in between, Steve Harmison was unplayable. Of course, he had like this period towards the end of his career where he dropped off. But when he was at his peak, he was one of the most talked about seamers in world cricket. Also part of that 2005 Ashes winning team. And I mean, I've had the pleasure to talk to him over some podcasts as well, which is pretty cool. So that's nice. I've never actually picked someone who I kind of know. But Harmy's record is actually pretty decent, right? 63 test matches, 226 wickets, an average of 31.82, but a strike rate of below 60. So it's 59.18. And his match factor is 1.06. So 6% better than the rest in the same test matches that he's played. So I've gone for the double England or double English pick in Hoggard and Harmison.
Yeah, there were probably brief moments where he wasn't far away from being one of the world's best bowlers, right? He didn't really know what he was doing, and he'd be quite honest with that. He just couldn't always replicate it and get it right.
To be fair, I was like a young teen when I was a Steve Harmison fan, right? And I was actually a fanboy of Steve Harmison because England toured at that time and stuff, and the Ashes. I have tried so hard to replicate his action, and I can't do it. My body doesn't work that way, you know?
I once wrote in my book that he is part animal, part machine, but sometimes it was an electric tie organization, and a gerbil. Like he really could fluctuate between being the worst bowler in the world or the best bowler in the world.
Yeah.
I still would have another English bowler ahead of him on this list, but I could see why you've got him here.
Yeah. Okay. So it is Estelle now, I believe.
Okay. Back to me. Okay. So I'm going for one of the old-timey picks. I hope it's not a bad one. Sarfaraz Nawaz from Pakistan.
That's a good one.
So very 55 matches.
Almost went Sarfaraz, honestly.
Yeah, 55 matches, 177 wickets at 32 overall. And I mean, his home and away records are pretty similar. So averaging 33 home and 32 away. Got a good record in England and in Pakistan. So I felt like looking at his record, he's done pretty well too. And kind of fits the bill for this.
Yeah, twirly fuck off mustache to add to that. His match factor is pretty good, Estelle, 1.09. So 9% better than all the other seamers who played in the same games. Your subcontinent logic also applies here, but then it also kind of doesn't because of reverse swing. He made it mainstream. He is known for reverse swing. But I think that on its own earns him a spot on this list, I feel. Because he added something to our game.
Yeah, I think it's really weird. He probably, if you go back, he plays 12 tests in Australia and 27 in Pakistan. And outside of India, those are probably the two flattest surfaces on earth.
Yeah.
And I really think that if he had, you know, bowled a little bit more in the other places, his numbers would be completely different. But having to bowl so much in those, and it wasn't that he was unsuccessful in those places. He averages low 30s in Australia as well. Obviously took the big 9-wicket haul at the MCG. He's a fantastic bowler. He was pretty much next on my list as well.
Yeah. And that 9 wickets at the MCG became so, you know, spoken of within Australian cricket culture. Like it became part of Australian cricket lore that Stuart Clarke, his nickname was Sarfaraz.
Yep. And that's insane. It's a really famous one. My dad still talks about that spell. So yeah, it's definitely a very, very well-remembered one. All right. I will go Andrew Flintoff next, who I think is a better bowler than Hoggard or Harmison.
Okay.
And I think by a distance, I think Flintoff, what's his match factor? What have you got there?
1.01. So he's only 1% better. But he has as many wickets as Harmy. 226. He's taken 78 tests to get there, though. Harmy has those same wickets in 63.
A few years ago, I realized that trying to find the best stories in cricket was impossible for any fan. I even tried to get funding to make my own cricket Huffington Post. It never quite worked. But luckily, we finally have someone filling this massive void in our game, Best of Cricket. They scour the publications everywhere to find, quite simply, all the best news and the greatest stories on our sport. Then they make it just as easy. They either email it or WhatsApp it direct to you. Cricket's greatest tales delivered to your device. This is truly the best of cricket. I think the biggest issue with Flintoff is he never took the wickets of tail-enders. And so if he takes wickets of tail-enders at a normal rate, I reckon he probably ends up with an average under 30. And he just didn't clean up any tail-enders. And the other issue he had is I think he bowled fractionally too short. And so if you watch him, he was beating the bat again and again and again. Like if you go back and watch Flintoff and you never saw his average, you would have thought he averaged 25 with the ball in Test cricket.
Yeah.
You know, his impact and everything else. And he bowled 90 mile an hour, but accurate. And there aren't many guys who were doing that back in those days. He also was shit in England. And I don't mean average. I'm pretty sure I'm right at this. Wait, I think I had these numbers up here before. In the UK, he averages 36.11, right? He averages 27 in South Africa, 28 in the West Indies, under 30 in Asia with 46 wickets. Right?
Wow.
At about 33 or so in Australia. But I think six of those tests in, actually might have been Australia and New Zealand. But about six of those tests in Australia, he played hungover and drunk. So the 2006-2007 series, he basically, didn't try. Like he just lost these, he lost the plot completely in that series. And he also played a World 11 game in Australia. So all things considered, I mean, if you watched him bowl, I don't think there's a bowler on this list who is better than him that we have on so far. But his record doesn't back it up. And it's largely because he didn't bowl particularly well in the UK. If he bowled now, I reckon he bowls about a meter and a half fuller. And I'm not sure. I don't know how you would play Flintoff in this era, right? I just think he would be so much better now. And he's unlucky not to even go on higher on this list. But he's earned that by having a shit average. He has a shit average even amongst the guys who have shit averages here, right? So I'll go with him. And then I'm going to go with the New Zealand version of the same thing. I'm going to go Chris Martin, who again, there's no way you could ever get me to believe that these two weren't world-class bowlers. And I don't know how they ended up with the records that they ended up with. They were way too skillful to end up with theirs. Chris Martin almost averages 34.
Yeah. And his match factor is 0.91. So he's 9% worse than the other seamers who were bowling in the same games. And we remember him for all the ducks and the headband and all of that stuff, right? We don't even remember his bowling, but he's got 233 test wickets.
The amount of times you would watch him and he would bowl an 8-over spell where the batter could not get near him and he wouldn't get a wicket. And you'd just be like, is there something wrong here? Like, and you talk to the New Zealand bowlers of that era and they were just like, we thought he was great. We don't understand. Like, some of them have better records than him. And they're like, we weren't anywhere near the level of bowler that he was, right? Like, I don't understand how it didn't work. And he was tested and he went all around the world. He played six tests in England and he averaged 54. I don't know how you play Chris Martin in England. I don't know how he didn't end up with a bowling average of like 18 there. And so for me, I think the only place he worked well was South Africa and at home. He was absolutely brilliant. How do you dominate the South African batters, but not some of the other batters that he went up against, right? Like there's nothing about Chris Martin that makes sense at all, but as someone who watched him a lot of his career, he was a fantastic bowler. And I'll never fully be able to explain that. Also, one of the last fast bowlers that I'm aware of who was a regular smoker.
Oh, interesting.
There you go. There's a fun one. Because fast bowlers generally give up cigarettes because it's not the smartest thing. Or they smoke occasionally. I'm pretty sure Chris Martin, I could be wrong. Sorry, Chris, if I've got this wrong. But my memory was quite a smoker. I 233 wickets, he should have averaged 29 and a half. And I don't know what happened. In fact, I've never looked to see if he struggled with tail enders as well, which might be another thing with him, but he was way better than this. Way better.
He's not even close to being the most famous Chris Martin, which is also quite tragic. It's not a competition.
I was going to say, who's the second most famous Chris Martin? It may not be him either, right? Like, there must be another Chris Martin somewhere that is also up there. So, yeah, for me, I just never understood why he didn't take wickets at the top level. He was such a great bowler.
Okay, so that means you're done, aren't you? Or do you have one more pick left?
It's a good question. I have one more pick.
One more pick.
All right, Estelle, then it's you.
Yeah, I would have gone with Chris Martin as well as my next pick. But I will go with I don't think Behram's going to like this one. I'm going with Mohammad Amir as my next pick.
Ah, that was my next pick, but that's fine. It's okay.
Because he didn't play any test cricket at home, did he? So his entire record is away and neutral. I mean, during his time, it wasn't as bad as it was now, right? Or we don't know because they didn't play anything there.
But before, like, test cricket left Pakistan, it was pretty bad. It was a graveyard then as well. But yeah, so he's got a decent record.
119 wickets in 36 games, averaging just above 30.47. So away, he's under 30, 29.57 and 35.55 in a neutral venue, which is the UAE, I suppose. Yeah, he's got a good record in England, good record in South Africa, as you'd expect, and the West Indies. We all know the issues that went on and why he didn't play more cricket, but definitely one of the most skillful bowlers of his generation.
It is ridiculous that he doesn't have a bowling average under 30.
And his match factor is pretty poor too, 0.89, which means he's 11% worse than the other seamers that played in the same test. But again, a career of two halves. That's a trend in your picks.
Yeah.
Pre-fixing Mohammad Amir was a prodigy. And when he came back, he was still good, but he wasn't quite the same. And it just continued to like get worse. But it's remarkable how he's on this list, right? Which means that I now have two picks, consecutive ones. All right. He missed out in the random Champions Trophy winners podcast, but I'm going to pick him over here as my fourth pick. Peter Siddle, a pretty decent record, 67 test matches, 221 wickets, and he's averaging 30.67, and his match factor is 1.06 as well. So 6% better than all the other seamers in the same test matches. Skiddy and deceptively quick. And my favorite Peter Siddle story is when someone asked him, what would you like to say about Sachin Tendulkar? And he was like, it's my first test wicket. So that's the kind of person that he is. And he's an absolute competitor. He's still playing the Big Bash League, isn't he? Like, is he still around, Peter Siddle?
Yeah.
Yes, he was playing very recently. Wasn't he playing the IL T20 or the...
I think he played the Big Bash. Didn't he?
Oh, did the Big Bash as well? I thought I saw him in a franchise league somewhere as well recently. But maybe I'm
like... There was some news that he bowled at 130 something or 140 or something like that. I don't know how far it's.
Do you remember there was this whole theory that when he went vegan, he wasn't going to be able to bowl fast anymore?
Also,
I mean,
he
did actually. He was properly quick. Do you know his first ball in Test cricket? Do you know what it was?
What was it?
He hit Gautam Gambhir in the head with a bouncer.
Wow.
When I saw him when he was young, he was quick, but he didn't keep it very long and he became a real accuracy bowler. He's also the bowler that really brought the wobble ball.
Pat Cummins and Scott Boland.
Yeah, it's really Peter Siddle bringing the wobble ball back. I think it would have come back anyway, but, you know, because they've got the England women's bowling coach was Tim McDonald and he came back as well. So I'm sure it would have moved and there were other players playing county cricket who came back. But Siddle was a huge part in the wobble ball being so popular in Australia.
I remember you telling me that story and how he kind of re-revolutionized it because Stuart Clark also brought the wobble ball to Australia early on. He's also got one of those faces that you don't want to get stared down by Peter Siddle. You'd probably be afraid at that point.
There's a famous line that is attributed to me, and I'm 98% sure I didn't write it, which is Peter Siddle looks like the kind of cricketer who would run through a brick wall for his country, and his face looks like the kind of person who already has. Which I thought was really, really harsh. I'm positive I didn't write it. I thought it was King Cricket, but King Cricket claims not to have written it as well. But there were like quotation sites with my name on it. And I was like, I just don't think I would have written that about a Victoria cricketer. I might have about any other state's cricketers, but he does have that sort of look of like, I'll do anything. Do you guys know what he was as well? Do you know he was a competitive wood chopper?
Oh, okay. I did not know that, but it completely like makes sense to me. It fits the bill. So, I can picture him chopping wood.
There's so many weird like subcultures of Australian sport that I don't think the rest of the world knows about. And this is one of them. The other one is it's a women's sport, which is calisthenics, but it's not calisthenics in the traditional sense. It's like a version of like dancing and doing fitness at the same time, but you get judged on it. It's so bizarre. Right. It's so freaky. And then the other one is the professional wood chopping, where you stand on a log with an axe right? And you slam the axe down until you get the axe through your leg to the other side and you break the thing. That's what he did. There's like a photos of footage of him, I think, of him with an axe in his hand at the Melbourne show. So that's the that was the major event of wood chopping, right? And, you know, and do and like people lose legs doing it. Like it's mad. It's a mad sport. And that's what Peter Siddle did.
Wow. I wonder if Peter Siddle was the one who chopped off Martin Guptill's toes or something.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, man, there are two, three picks over here, which I'm confused between. One of them is an oldie or golden oldie from Australia, which I just want Jared to pick at some point. I don't know much about him. I can't speak to him. So I'll pick the guy who I can speak to. Mark Wood is my final pick. Not a stellar record at all, actually. 119 wickets in 37 test matches. He's averaging 30.43. Actually, strike rate is pretty good. It's under 55. Match factor is 0.95, though. So he's 5% worse. But like, if you've seen Mark Wood bowl, if he's fully fit and he's raring to go, then you are afraid. And it's like a wonky sort of action as well, where he is like, I don't know, catapulting the ball towards you. He's rapid. I would say in his era, he is the fastest bowler. I mean, Nokia is probably close second. There's Haris Rauf. Then, of course, you've got the Bumrahs and all of those guys. But Mark Wood
I think I've got a theory on his match factor. He's been shit at home.
Yeah, he has been.
And the bowling average in England has been really, really low at that time. And the pitches don't really suit him all that much either. And because of that, he averages, I think, about 33 at home, right?
Yeah.
And so he doesn't cash in the way that all the skillful wobble ball bowlers have been cashing in, right? But when he goes away, he averages about 27, 28, right?
That's pretty decent.
And I know people, even within English cricket, are like, just stop picking him at home. You can find other bowlers to do what you need at home. Just save him for when you can go away. So that would be my guess with the match factor. But I could be wrong. But look, he probably should end up with an average of about 29 or 30, shouldn't he?
Yeah. He should, I suppose, but that also depends on how much he plays, because if he plays two test matches in a row, he's out for the next three. That's been Mark Wood's career, right? Surgery on surgery on surgery. It's unfortunate, but that is kind of how it goes for many express seamers. And I suppose he's done enough to make this list, I guess. Okay. Estelle, finish up.
Yep. Yeah. So I've gone with two Indians and two Pakistanis. So I have to go with Sri Lanka to end it.
And I have gone with two Aussies and three Englishmen. It's weird.
I'm going to pick Suranga Lakmal as my last pick. He does not have a great record. I think he probably has the highest average amongst the people that we've picked.
So have you picked the guy from Prison Break, basically? Because he looks exactly like him.
He does, doesn't he?
Proper doppelganger situation.
He's averaging 36 overall. And that's 47 at home and 32 away, 38 in neutral venues. But if you look at year on year, like Biram mentioned, like that whole split in careers, from 2018 to 2021, he's averaging under 28, right? So he's got 27 in 2018, averaging 23 in 2019, 2020 is 15, but he's played only two tests. And 2021, he's averaging 26. Also, I think one of the reasons I want to pick him is that many a time he was playing as a sole pace bowler for Sri Lanka when they did play at home. So he had to carry that burden. So over the second half of his career, I think he really kind of grew as, you would now say, probably Sri Lanka's second best fast bowler, right? After Chaminda Vaz.
Oh, you'd say that?
Yeah.
Well, who else do you have on the list?
I don't know. I was a big Kulasekara fan. I don't know. I haven't
looked at his numbers. Not in test cricket.
You're right. I mean, I think there were a couple of bowlers over here who could have gotten ahead of Suranga Lakmal, but it's a good pick. It's a good pick nonetheless. I mean,
it's an interesting one because
there's another Indian on this list and another Pakistani if you wanted to complete that trend.
I think he probably deserves to be on this list because I saw him bowl a spell in England where I think he bowled something like five maidens in a row. He was so incontrollable. And I remember that day I looked up his bowling average and it was like 45, right? Or 48 or something. And I was like, you what now? Like, so again, I think it's a little bit of, I think there's an element with him where again, I think he was probably a better bowler than his record ends up being. And part of that is probably also that I guess he didn't take a lot of tail end wickets as well. And so he bowled on really flat wickets that weren't made for him. It took him a long time to develop. And then when he did, I would say at his best, he was better bowler than, I shouldn't say this. I would say he was a more skillful bowler than say Ishant Sharma, right? But Ishant Sharma was a little bit faster and a little bit taller. But I think Lakmal was like not far away from Ishant Sharma. But unfortunately, when he got really good, he still didn't play on any wickets. Like at least in India, Ishant Sharma could take wickets, right? Whereas Surendra Lakmal was basically unplayable at home sometimes. Like he would, his job in the side was to not bowl, right? And yeah. And so I think when he was at his best, he didn't bowl enough, I suppose is the way I'm putting it. So I think he probably ends up, what was his average, 37?
36.44.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably should have ended up at about 33, 34 in that in that range. But yeah, I've got no issue with him being on this list. All right.
You've got a really obvious pick that you could go for. And then you've got one of those cricketers that you overly obsess about as well. He's on my list as well. So,
as a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year. And I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here. Because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies. But even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally. I'm a big fan of Jason Holder. And I wonder if he just hasn't taken enough wickets to propel him there. And he probably should average under 30 as well. So Jason Holder is certainly someone that is on my list. The player that you're talking about is probably Carson Garvey.
Yep.
The issue with Carson Garvey is he bowled a lot of spin.
Yeah.
I don't know if he just qualifies as a pace bowler for this particular endeavor that we're doing. There's a couple of good New Zealand players too, and I just want to say this player's name out loud because we had a women's podcast recently with some great names. But how about Dick Motts? Hey, who doesn't want to say brilliant. Dick Motts? Hey, Dick
it's almost Motts. It's almost as good as Fred Titmus.
Dick Motts sounds like an English dessert you would definitely not eat, right?
Or like genital warts.
Yeah, but there's a couple of others as well too. Ewan Chatfield and Lance Cairns. I was interested that Malinga didn't go up higher on Estelle's list specifically because she picks only Sri Lankans. So yeah, so I think though, if I was coming down, it has to be out of Jason Holder or Jeff Lawson, the Australian. Jeff Lawson's got a bizarre record though, because I think he was brilliant in Australia and he really never bowled anywhere near at the level, anywhere else. I don't think he's that much worse than someone like Peter Siddle, for instance. But the bigger problem with Jeff Lawson was he probably quite often in that period, especially with Lily being injured and Tomo not always being at his best, he probably had to lead the attack and he probably would have been a really good second, third or fourth seamer rather than first or second seamer. But he still ended up with a really good record. I just have watched a bit of Jeff Lawson bowl and I'm not sure he's a better bowler than Jason Holder.
Okay, that's fair.
So I'm going to go Jason Holder because I just think Jason Holder is a fantastic bowler. And you watch those spells. And one of the things I really liked about Jason Holder, in fact, let me see if I can bring this up here. The economy rates of bowlers. Jason Holder, his economy rate is 2.61 in modern cricket. Like the amount of times I will watch a test match and he'll take like 1 for 20 off like an 8 or a 9 over spell, but he'll completely stop the game right? It just, the game just stops because he's just like, you're just not going to score for a little while. And, and you know, and he'll basically, he'll say to the batters sometimes, good luck, because I'm not going to let you score. And that's the thing that gets me over. I think it's still possible. I don't know. Is he, he's unretired at the moment, I think?
Yeah, I think so. Yep. He's playing.
I still think
Indies.
It's possible he ends up with an average under 30 and with more than 200 test wickets if he wants to, and he may not want to, but I think he's a fantastic player. I just think, having watched him and Lawson, and I didn't see early Lawson, but I certainly saw later Lawson, I just think Holder is the better bowler of those two.
So just to compare the two, I've got the numbers in front of me. Jeff Lawson took 180 wickets in 46 tests compared to Jason Holder taking 162 in 68. But Jason Holder's average of 30.4 is slightly better than Lawson's 30.56. On match factor, however, Holder is at 0.89, so 11% worse than the rest. And Jeff Lawson is 1.04, so 4%
better. Interesting.
Yeah,
I'm interested that Lawson is better on match factor, because I would have thought that Holder would have been fine there. But I still think I'm pretty happy with that. Having seen both of them bowl, I think I don't have a big issue. I might be wrong, but my guess is that Holder will end up with an average of under 30. And yeah, I think Lawson's average of 30 seems about fair for him as a bowler. But also, you got to remember that if you look at those players that you just said there, match factor is a really good way of looking at it. But it all it really tells us is what the pitches were like in the games that they played. If you look at Holder's record, his record's like all over the place compared to Lawson's. But he has played in a lot more places around the world, and he's a lot more tested. And you know, he's had some good test matches in India, for instance, bowled well in Sri Lanka at times, in the UAE one series he was unplayable. I just know a lot more about his bowling, I think, than we did with Lawson, because Lawson, I think, only played in like four, he took a lot of wickets, but only played in like four places, I think. So all things considered, I'll go with him. Now, I was looking something up while we were talking.
Okay.
Right? So this is all time, and this isn't just, in fact, I'm going to take the spinners out of this. But if you look at the bowlers that we talked about here, there is a really common denominator with a lot of these bowlers. And that common denominator is, remember when I said about the tail end thing?
Uh-huh.
Right. So Fidel Edwards, is he have the lowest average of the guys with over 100 wickets? Or the highest average, I should say?
He might actually.
Where's his record?
Wait, I have his. Yep. So he averages 37.87 and has 165 wickets in 54 test matches.
He has the highest average against the tail. So 8, 9, 10, 11. He averages 22.1, right? Zahir Khan, 21.44, the second highest average against the tail. Andrew Flintoff, fourth highest, 21.11. Chris Martin, 20.86. Wow. Ishan Sharma, 20.82. It's essentially what we said. Right?
Yeah.
Those guys dominated top orders, but they didn't cash in when they were bowling against the tail. So if you compare that to Shoaib Akhtar's average against the tail, what do you guys guess?
Five.
That's not bad. Nine.
Okay.
Kagiso Rabada, 10.37 against the tail. Matt Henry, 11. Jasprit Bumrah, 11. Shaheen Afridi, 11. Trent Bolt, 11.85 against the tail. Tim Southee, 16 against the tail. So the difference against the top order with those guys is not that much, right? And so what it really shows you at that point is that you can end up averaging over 30 against top order, over 30 in your career if you just can't bowl against the tail, right? And that's it's a really important thing to remember. I might make a video of it. I made one years ago when Shane Warne kept saying that Mitchell Starc only took wickets against the tail. And like, I went and looked it up, but it just wasn't true. And in fact, Shane Warne and Mitchell Starc had a very similar record against the against the tail and the top order as each other, which apparently someone told Shane Warne and he was really, really upset at. But the point being is that like, sometimes we look at these things and we're a little bit wrong. But I knew the Flintoff one. But I didn't know about Martin and Zahir Khan and all those other sorts of guys. But if we go to the top of this list, right? So let me just see where these guys are now. So if we do Martin first. So Martin has a better record against top four batters than Steve Harmison or Muhammad Siraj. Great. So straight away you see the difference, and that's just top four. Like we could bring that out even further if we wanted to. Flintoff again. Flintoff has a better record against the top four batters than Matthew Hoggard and Mitchell Johnson.
Okay.
So you see what I'm starting to say here is that it doesn't quite fit the way that you would think it would. And so in order, there's a lot of guys here who are very good bowlers who don't have particularly good records overall because of the tail. So it's just it's a fun one to remember anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we all learned something today, I suppose. But in terms of honorable mentions, I had Umesh Yadav quite high.
Yeah.
I think he misses out. Umar Gul was there. Shannon Gabriel, anyone?
Yeah, I mean, I love Shannon Gabriel. I didn't have him far away from that sort of Jeff Lawson, Jason Holder tier.
Yeah, and then I had Stephen Finn and also Michael Kasparovich and Andre Nell as well.
I figured with Andre Nell, he probably bowled when the wicket. What was his match factor?
Wait, let me check Andre Nell's match factor. Very good, 1.09. So he's 9% better than the rest.
Oh, I take that back because I just wondered if he got a boost. So he probably, it's the opposite, right? We probably look worse on him. And he deserves more. Very good flat pitch bowler, Andre Nell, I would say, overall.
Two West Indians in here as well, in Merv Dillon and Jerome Taylor. And then, of course, there's Danny Morrison.
but Danny Morrison with a better attack around him would have taken a lot more wickets.
Patrick Patterson was also, I thought, had a good record, right?
Oh, I didn't see him.
Is he averaging over 30?
Yeah, 30.90.
Oh.
But only 93 wickets in 28 games.
Ah, so I had the 100 wicket filter thing on. Because I was like, I'm not looking at people with less than 100 wickets.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Who else did I have? I mentioned Carson Garvey, didn't I? Mohammad Siraj is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still might end up with an average under 30, or he might never play again at the moment. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he needs to be better with the old ball as per Rohit Sharma. That's what we know.
Devin Malcolm's an interesting one, by the way.
Hmm.
Because a bit like Steve Harmison, he wasn't... You know, when it worked, he was certainly one of the best bowlers in the world. It just didn't work that often.
Mm. I mean, that's also similar to what Stephen Finn was kind of, you know, going through in his entire career. Because when he was good, he would almost obliterate batting lineups.
Yep.
And often it didn't work. And his height helped him. But anyway, there are probably lots of names that we missed as well over here. So let us know in the comment section, guys, who you think should have featured in either our 15 or in honorable mentions. And let's have the 15 real quick and then everyone's individual picks, Jared.
The 15 is Brett Lee, Jawed Khalshanaf, Tim Southee, Zahir Khan, Ishant Sharma, Matthew Hoggard, Steve Harmison, Safraz Nawaz, Andrew Flintoff, Chris Martin, Mohammad Amir, Peter Siddle, Mark Wood, Sarangal Akmal, Jason Holder. Bayram went Lee, Hoggard, Harmison, Siddle, Wood. Estelle went Shrinath Sharma, Nawaz, Amir, Lakmal. And I went Southee, Khan, Flintoff, Martin, Jason Holder.
So I think it's a tight one, this one. I don't really know who wins it. I guess everyone in the comments will tell us who wins it. But that kind of wraps up this episode of the Quick Picks. So thank you guys for watching all of it, if you're still here. And just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. And that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. We'll see you soon enough next week for another Quick Picks podcast. But that's all for today. Have a good week, guys, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. Okay.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.